This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Thousands of lush oak trees have lined the streets of Durham for decades. But back when most of the trees were planted in the 1930s and 40s, not every neighborhood received the same number of saplings. A Duke study released last year looked at the distribution of trees in Durham. It found wealthy white neighborhoods have more trees than low-income areas with largely minority populations. Researchers also found that this disparity correlates to a history of housing discrimination in Durham and other cities. A forum this afternoon at the Durham Arts Council will talk about the state of trees in Durham and the distribution of disparity. Joining me now is Greg Cooper, a graduate student in environmental management and forestry at Duke's Nicholas School of the Environment, also the co-author of that report on Durham's trees. Welcome to the program, Greg. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Also with us is Kofi Boone. He's a professor of landscape architecture at NC State University and also a panelist in the forum. Welcome back, Kofi.
Thank you.
Greg, tell us more about this report. What did you find in terms of the disparity of the placement of trees and wealth in Durham?
So the report started with looking at Durham as a whole and seeing, all right, we have this canopy cover and we have a lot of trees. So currently Durham has 52% canopy cover across the city in our most recent report. But the thing is, those trees aren't everywhere. They're not equal across the city. And so what we found was if you look at modern demographics across the city, the canopy cover doesn't necessarily match to that. So you'll have areas that have minority populations or have low income, and they might have a fair amount of trees still. So then what we did was look back, as you said, and we looked back to the 1930s when the trees were planted. So right now we have about, you know, several thousand willow oaks throughout the city of Durham, and they're aging out and they're dying out. And we have this kind of this shadow in throughout the city of what happened in the 1930s. And what that shadow is of what the demographics were back then. And so what we have are these maps from the 1930s made by the Homeowners Loan Corporation, which is a federal program created after the Great Depression in order to slow the rate of foreclosures across cities all across the United States. And what they did was they hired local real estate agents. They hired lenders to see what the ratings would be for neighborhoods to give out loans. And so they rated neighborhoods from A to D, A being the highest rating. So those were the affluent, generally white neighborhoods, and D being the lowest rating. Wow. And if you look at this throughout Durham, we have a selection of A and D neighborhoods, A, B, C, and D, A being the highest and B being the lowest incomes. And if you map our current tree canopy covers, which were planted around the same time as those maps are generated, we find that those affluent neighborhoods have a lot more trees than those poor neighborhoods on a threefold basis.
And that's more than just a rating system, because then also what went into effect was a federal loan guarantee program that would guarantee mortgages. And the idea was to help jumpstart the economy. Let's get the building industry going. Let's get some houses built and also build wealth among working class and middle class people. So this was really the beginning of developing a middle class. But it systematically excluded people of color because of this rating system, which would then forego a loan guarantee and therefore mortgages.
Absolutely.
So you've got this going on, tree cover. But Kofi, the question is, so what? Okay, trees correlate with this kind of historic discrimination. Does that matter now? And what's the impact of trees on an urban landscape and the urban environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that there are two layers to it. One of it is trees are good in terms of bang for the buck and return on investment. It's one of the most important things, most valuable things you can do in any city. They deal with, on a rainy day like today, helping absorb stormwater. They provide shade and reduce energy costs on adjacent buildings by casting shade on them. They make streets more inviting to encourage outdoor activity. There's a lot of perceptual data about when people see street trees in those kinds of environments, well-designed public spaces, particularly streets. They feel safer and they feel their social networks and their community connections are strong. So there's a lot of benefits to trees themselves. But, you know, what we try and talk about in the legacy of design, and particularly landscape architecture, is that there are mainstream environmental values that have been somewhat exclusive for a long period of time, which is to say that certain environmental benefits like a tree, green space, other things are universally accepted as being valuable no matter which community you deal with. And in a situation not unlike what was just mapped out about the differences in investment over time in cities and in communities, different communities have different values. And so the idea that their environmental values may not be greening, beautification, the things we think are mainstream. They may be more basic ones like, you know, access to affordable housing, transportation, other things that build community networks. And so the perception of the interest in the resources for something that might be as benign as a tree might be perceived as a threat, especially in current environment in our city where there's rapid reinvestment and some gentrification and displacement in neighborhoods surrounding the city. When people see reinvestment in the public realm, it sends a cue to some folks that, uh-oh, you know, this is going to impact my property values. You know, the time is, the clock is ticking now where I have to think about relocating.
And the reason this is an important question now, of course, is some of those trees are beginning to die. We've got to replace them. And then there becomes this equity question. Well, are we just going to put them back in the rich neighborhoods or should we look in those neighborhoods we've neglected? But as you suggested, that can be an ominous sign these days. If I see trees coming in, what's that going to mean for these other factors in my life?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we're quick to define the problems and then think we've solved them. And then come with the solutions. So, you know, there are other examples. So, you know, one that I point to for a conversation's sake is the Casey Trees group out of Washington, D.C., which felt that the same situation was happening, not just in particular parts of Washington, D.C. in the federal area, but the entire city. And one thing they did to kind of break down some of those perceptions and stereotypes is engage local communities as citizen scientists, young people, schools, educators, community groups to help define the issues. So they went out and they did a tree inventory. They're one of the really early participatory geospatial studies of mapping all the trees in D.C., their health, their performance, their species, public access, open access to all. And that buy-in initially in terms of we all collectively define the problem and laid out the solution, and it's for the entire city, not just for different neighborhoods, I think broke some of that negative perception. They were able to make the connection between something as simple as a street tree to some other issues.
But Greg, taking us back to the time when these were planted, that was certainly not the understanding at the time. I mean, those trees were planted at a cost. It was the city planting them, developers, who was bearing that cost at the time, do we know?
So from what we can tell from looking back is we have the city tree board at the time made a big push to plant willow oaks throughout the city of Durham. So there was a city board that had a big push to plant these trees. And a lot of it was neighborhood involvement. So we had advocates in specific neighborhoods that requested trees. And largely, you'll see a lot of trees in those neighborhoods and not those, so much other trees.
Obviously, the neighborhoods with voice and with power in. So this gets back to what you're saying, Kofi, that part of this problem is political, from the start. So rather than just start with the trees, let's go back to empowering these neighborhoods and neighbors. They can make their own choices about how their neighborhood should look.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the tendency now is to sort of silo and partition, you know, broader issues. And there's a little bit of a aversion to the risk of jumping into sort of this ball of, you know, cats of complicated issues. But I think that people can make the connections. So the idea that, you know, I'm interested in safe places for my children to walk. I have elderly parents or relatives that, you know, would benefit from a little bit of cooling in the summer. You know, I'm an advocate of seeing habitat in my own neighborhood and I like to see wildlife. Well, if that's the case, you know, or I have a school where we have a STEM program and, you know, the kids need to learn about things like photosynthesis or other things, you know, this is where that marriage can happen. It's like, oh, by the way, you know, by dealing with street trees, we can make streets more walkable, you know, homes more comfortable and educational programs more successful.
So you can do a lot of things with this conversation about tree canopy, about canopy in urban environments. Activate neighborhoods, empower people who had less voice. But the ultimate question or an ultimate question about whether this gentrifies your neighborhood and ends up making your neighborhood more expensive than you can afford, it seems like that might be a thornier issue to solve.
Yeah, it's a tougher one. And I think that we have a long way to go to talk about the level of transparency necessary so that people can separate public investment from private gain. And there are some broader citywide and regional things that need to be talked about in terms of what we really mean when we talk about equity.
Tell us about you've had some experience with this with the in East Raleigh with the South Park Heritage Walk project. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, in that particular case, we were very interested in working with local communities to make their local history a little more public. So, you know, in some cases, there are people who had amazing stories and narratives that gave quality and character to the places they lived. And, you know, they were in their heads and, you know, in their social networks. And so through landscape architecture, we attempted to make those more public, more visual, probably most significantly in Chavis Park, which is one of the oldest African-American public spaces in the state. And so, you know, when we talked about, you know, the mainstream environmental issues, like we need to deal with stormwater and flooding, or, you know, we need to deal with trees, or, you know, these things, you know, you get into these conversations and people kind of agree with you, but on the pyramid, you know, it was probably like third or fourth below, you know, other issues. And so coupling the idea of making changes in the public landscape, the public realm, with being able to amplify and tell this story, led to a little more acceptance of both ideas. And so as they implement these changes, particularly Chavis Park, which got a $12 million bond issue several years ago, they're going through a first phase restoration of that particular place. Trees play a front and center role in terms of, you know, how do we create these places to tell these stories.
Greg, how about your report and the fact that there is this sort of historic racism built into this? How does that contribute to the conversation about how we move forward, do you think?
I think the biggest thing is just being inclusive of who are including this conversation and bringing in groups from all over the city instead of the traditional neighborhoods where we plant the trees in the past and continue to plant. We really have to find a way to reach out to more people in order to kind of break that barrier.
Talking to Greg Cooper, a graduate student in environmental management and forestry at Duke's Nicholas School of the Environment and co-author of a report on Durham's trees. Also with me, Kofi Boone, a professor of landscape architecture at NC State University. They are panelists at a forum today, 2:30 at Durham Arts Council. The event is called Trees Over Durham, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
Coming up on the State of Things, bird brain insult? Not really. They're very smart, a lot smarter than we thought. They just pack a lot of smart into a very small space. The genius of birds coming up on the State of Things, North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.